My question is if we have a 2036A1, which is either an actual or an implied right to the income from the property, or the right to the use or the enjoyment of the property, then it seems to me if you're giving up that kind of 2036A1 interest, you're giving up some rights to the partnership. And remember, the definition of a partnership agreement can be verbal agreements between the parties. So it doesn't have to be a written agreement, but if I'm going to value that interest and Bob has the right to the use of the income or enjoyment of the property, it concerns me that I have to take that account into account in valuing his interest. On the other hand, if it's a 2036A2 right like the Powell case, which is merely the right to get together with the other partners to decide to liquidate the partnership, then I'm not sure that you're valuing that any different than you would any minority interest in a partnership that you don't have control of. So whether or not or how we value Bob's interest on this redemption, I think is going to depend on a number of factors, and whether or not you're going to redeem Bob's interest, in which I think you do need to apply the same minority discount that you applied when you made the gifts, or you liquidate his interest, in which that minority discount is not going to apply because you're making the distribution pro rata to everybody, is both an economic decision and a tax decision that the parties have to talk about. Take a look, if you would, over on page 2 of the materials, and I just want to highlight something up at the top of page 2, and this is an issue that is not normally discussed. So what I'm proposing for you in this problem on the board is if we redeem Bob's interest for more than its fair market value, for the $5 million fair market value as capital account rather than the $3 million, which is the discounted value as capital account, whether or not Alice and Sarah have made gifts to Bob. So let's assume that we conclude, and I think that's the right answer, that they would have made gifts to Bob. We know that that's going to be a gift that they have to report on a gift tax return. But how did they get that value out of the partnership that they're going to then gift to Bob? I think there's a great risk, and certainly in the corporate area, you would treat it this way, as if there was a distribution from the partnership to Alice and Sarah of that excess value, and then they transferred it to Bob. And anytime there's a distribution from a partnership, we have to worry about whether or not there's income tax consequences to Alice and Sarah. Normally, a partnership distribution is not taxable unless cash is distributed in excess of basis. So let's assume that there's no income tax to them, but it's nonetheless going to reduce their basis for their remaining partnership interest. Just something, an issue to think about. Take a look at this problem on chapter 2, which is on page 3 of the materials. I have two entities. The parents own 100% of a manufacturing company, which is worth 100x, and the children own an interest in a sales company, which is worth 10x. And historically, I mean, Jerry's talking about going back to Fred McMurray and everything, this kind of transaction is a very typical transaction that people entered into when they're trying to shift value out of their estate over to their kids. They bifurcate a business activity and they allow the kids to enter into a separate business to provide services or to sell the products that have been generated by this manufacturing company. Very standard technique. It's been approved for the last 50 years at least. The parents and the kids decide that they want to merge the business back together into a single company. So they merge it. And what is the ownership of the company after the merger? Now remember, parents owned 100% of a company worth 100x. The kids owned 100% of the company worth 10x. And after the merger, the parents own 19% of the company and the kids own 81% of the company, okay? Same issue that I described in chapter one is there an indirect gift when we entered in this transaction? And in the Cavallaro case, the tax court agreed with the IRS that there was a gift because they said that the taxpayer did not provide sufficient evidence as to the value of the children's corporation, and that therefore there was a shift in value from the parents over to the children. It was appealed up to the First Circuit, and the First Circuit remanded it back to the tax court. Now, when people first saw that remand, and I heard a lot of people talk about this case, they said, well, you know, there must be something that the tax court did wrong, or that there was evidence that they didn't include. It goes back down to the tax court on remand, and the tax court agreed that there was a flaw in the taxpayers, or then the IRS's valuation expert, and they reduced the deficiency from about $29 million to $22 million. Not a taxpayer victory, okay? Now, the lesson that I want you to learn from these first two chapters